This is Mike Moore, co-author of Marketing Multiplied, a real-world guide to channel marketing for beginners, practitioners, and executives. And you are listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, which is named by LinkedIn as one of 10 podcasts that will make you a better marketer. My goal for this podcast is to help you discover new ideas about what's actually working in the quickly changing field of modern marketing and sales. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything linkable in this episode's show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. And since you're a listener to the Marketing Book Podcast, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or some other helpful resource that I know of for whatever situation you find yourself in, just connect with me on LinkedIn where we can chat and I'll try to point you in the right direction. Also, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Blinkist. Blinkist is an app that takes the key insights from the best nonfiction books and distills them into a format that you can read or listen to in just a few minutes on your smartphone. Several of the books featured on the Marketing Book Podcast are on Blinkist. You can sign up for free at Blinkist.com/marketingbookpodcast. Blinkist is spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, and if you opt for the paid version, you'll get an additional 20% off, but only if you go to Blinkist.com/marketingbookpodcast. I also have a link to it at marketingbookpodcast.com. I'll have more on Blinkist in a few minutes. And now, on with the show. Today, we welcome Mike Moore to the Marketing Book Podcast to talk about the new book he has co-authored with Peter Thomas, Marketing Multiplied, a real-world guide to channel marketing for beginners, practitioners, and executives, published by Franklin Kennedy. Mike Moore serves as Averitech's VP of Channel Strategy. He has spent 23 years in information technology as a channel partner and as a channel and field marketer for software companies like Microsoft, GE Healthcare, and Progress Software. And, interesting fact, he was a military policeman in the Massachusetts National Guard. Mike, congratulations on Marketing Multiplied, and welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, just to be clear, for the listener's benefit, you are not the documentary filmmaker Michael Moore.
No, thankfully I'm not. Although I think with some of his films, you know, the name has risen to a level of infamy. So
okay.
I do have to explain sometimes that I'm not the same.
Yes, and you're not the Mike Moore who plays for the Los Angeles Chargers or, you know, the NHL. So there's lots of Mike Moores out there, and just want to make sure everyone's clear on that. So, Mike, tell us the story of how this book came to be and why you wrote it.
Sure. So Marketing Multiplied has really been something that, as you mentioned, Peter Thomas is the co-author. Peter and I have worked together for a number of years. In fact, we met when I was working at Microsoft and wanted to build a partner marketing platform to support doing partner events. So Microsoft delivers a lot of events. They still do. Getting channel partners of Microsoft, the resellers and local services partners, those kind of folks to go out and deliver Microsoft-themed events was what we were looking to do. And needed a way to automate all of the workflow around that because there weren't the tools that we have available today to do that kind of work. So that's when I met Peter. Peter was running a software development firm that later became Averitech, the company that we work for today. And we started a great partnership where Peter was able to build software to enable the marketing workflows and things that we wanted to do. Fast forward 14 years later, I'm working for Averitech. We're selling the successor of that product, really, that he built as a custom piece of software many years ago. And as we talk to different companies and we share our advice about channel marketing and how we believe it should be done, we found that doing things like ebooks, they're a very nice, simple little piece of content. As many marketers create ebooks to share ideas, but we didn't have the ability to really bring together everything that we thought should be said about channel marketing. And that's where the book idea came from. We thought creating a long-form piece of content like a book was the right way to bring together all the ideas, all the frameworks, all the methodology to really support the needs of channel marketers.
Well, let me add to that. So I was, for purposes at work, where I am, I was Googling channel marketing. And it wasn't long before I found you and the fact that your book had just come out. I immediately bought it, read it. I thought, oh my gosh, I've got to try and get Mike on the podcast to talk about this. And here's why. A lot of listeners to the Marketing Book Podcast connect with me on LinkedIn, and we talk about books and, you know, other things that I think might be helpful. And I have had several people say, can you recommend a book about channel marketing? And I'm thinking, holy cow. I say, you know, I haven't interviewed him yet, but this interview is coming up, and I would send him a link to your book's website. So I think, and I hope that there's, you know, greater demand for this than maybe even you all had realized.
Well, and that's one of the things that we point out. You know, we did put together a book website and some of the marketing, you know, spiel that we put around it, saying that when you search on LinkedIn, there are almost 2 million people with channel marketing job titles. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the time we looked, I think there were almost 25,000 job openings associated with channel marketing. So it's a niche within the overall marketing profession that people find themselves in. We talk about this a bit in the book, that it's a bit of an accidental kind of space within marketing that people find themselves in. Mm-hmm. But there's really very little material out there to help support how to do it professionally, how to do it well, how to figure out if there's a right or a wrong way to do channel marketing.
Yes, and I want to quote from the beginning, two things from the beginning of the book. You say, when we began writing this book, we had a specific audience in mind, the channel marketer. It was to be a book just for those who have found themselves in a channel marketing role within their companies. That's how it happens. You sort of find yourself in the role one day. Nobody goes to school for channel marketing, and the field isn't covered thoroughly, if at all, by most college marketing programs. The average person on the street doesn't even know what channel marketing is. And then you go going on, it says, it's not surprising when you consider that within the field, there's no clear-cut definition of what channel marketing is. There isn't even a consensus on what to call the category. Some call it local marketing. Others call it partner marketing, affiliate marketing, alliance marketing, or other terms. So, Mike Moore, what is channel marketing?
Channel marketing, and this is maybe the explanation that I give my mother, is, you know, I try to explain to her why I wrote a book, right?
Yeah.
That's the ultimate litmus test, right? Is can you explain to your mother or, you know, father what this is about?
It's true.
And so the concept as I explain it to her is that when you work for companies that don't sell directly to end customers, you need other companies to handle those sales. And those are the partners that we're talking about. But more than just the sales motion of transacting, we need those companies to be out there telling our story. And that's what channel marketing is about. So that to me is in essence what we're doing. Now, you can apply that. You know, I'm a tech industry guy. That's where I've spent my entire career. There are statistics that one of the analysts that we work closely with at Forrester, a guy named Jay McBain, says, I think something like 80%+ of world trade is done indirectly through channels. In the tech industry, that's certainly true, because you look at large resellers, large distributors, you know, selling and aggregating products. But you even go to talk about a car dealership, right? Those are distributors at the local level for those brands, but they're not owned by Ford or Chrysler. They're owned by local businesses. And they're incentivized to go try and market on behalf of those car makers, because they want to attract buyers to come in and buy those products that Ford or Chrysler has built. So getting those companies to take action, that's really the work of a channel marketer, is giving them the information, tools, resources, messaging to help them take action and attract those local buyers. Mm-hmm.
So in your past, what were examples of where you were a partner?
Yeah, I started my career working for partners. So my very first job in this industry was working for a company called Corporate Software, and it was a big hardware reseller company at the time. This is kind of early 90s, and just before the Windows 95 launch, which was a big milestone in the industry. But it was getting on the phone and talking to companies and saying, you know, why would you want to have a contract with each one of these different hardware and software manufacturers? If you work with us at Corporate Software, we can meet all of your needs and be your single source for all of your IT products and services. And that's quite common in this industry. So through the work that I did there, I started working with some of the different companies like Microsoft or Lotus, which, you know, eventually became part of IBM, and started to work with those different vendors and understand from their standpoint what they were looking for from partners like us, and then eventually crossed over to the vendor side and was able to learn the other side of the equation.
Mm-hmm. Now, you write that channel marketing teams are often stuck you know, woefully behind, maybe 3 to 5 years behind the rest of the marketing field. Why is that?
When you look at the role of a direct marketer, so if we talk about kind of direct versus indirect, so indirect would be where the channel team sits. That direct team has control over what they're doing and how they're doing it. The indirect or channel marketer has to try to create programs to compete for the attention of channel partners, get them to take action, train them in how to do things like marketing, because usually the skill set is behind. So the channel marketer has much more on their plate than the direct marketer, and therefore has to choose about where they spend their time, how they hone their own skills and the things that they focus on. And I think a lot of that leads to the fact that they have to be that selective in prioritizing how they're working on different things, and they don't keep up with the latest in social media or the latest in search engine optimization or whatever the topic might be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got the sense that there was probably more reactive firefighting than they would like, but that seems like it might be part of the job.
Unfortunately, for many channel marketers, it's part of the job. They spend their days reacting to what channel partners are asking for. Mm-hmm. What we are advocating in the book is that you reorient that relationship where you are providing leadership and direction to them about the things that they should be spending their time on, how they take your message out to market, automating. You know, that's what we do kind of in our day jobs at Averitech, is have a software platform that helps automate the work of channel marketing. But whether people use our software or not, we want them to be more of in a leadership position, to be more strategic in those channel partner planning conversations, versus always reacting and essentially almost acting like an agency partner and taking orders from the partners and then having to fulfill them, because, you know, it's the rat race that they'll never get out of.
Yeah, I got the, it was very clear in the book that that's a slippery slope that you will probably regret, as if you turn into a marketing agency for your partners. Now, there were two big concepts that I think, regardless if you're in channel marketing or not, that you talk about at the beginning of the book that, of course, made me stand up and shout amen. You write that we're in a buyer's economy, yet many companies still don't understand this and are being left behind. Explain what you mean, and why do you think that is, and why is that problematic for channel marketers?
If you think about the typical channel partner, many of them have built their businesses over time. A lot of them, especially in the IT space that I work in, they've built up those businesses, and there was a way of doing things when they founded these companies maybe 20, 30 years ago. And how you communicated with prospective buyers, how you found them, where you found them, has all changed. And, you know, it's the internet certainly is a piece of it. Social networks, you know, adds another layer to it. But I think people can relate to it if you just think about the next vacation that you want to go on. If we were hanging up from our conversation today and going to go do research on a vacation, you'd go to probably two different places to do that. And the number one place you go to is Google. And the other one you would go to is maybe your social network on Facebook or even LinkedIn or just friends and family. But you'd be asking people about recommendations. Hey, we're thinking about going somewhere new. Any ideas for us? And then as you get ideas, you might go to Google and start searching for destinations. And you're not calling a travel agent, not in 2018, not unless you've already worked with them and you have a destination in mind and you're trying to get price, you know, negotiation help, right?
But 30 years ago, when I was reading this, I thought about, well, I was actually living in Germany at the time, but I remember having to walk to a travel agent to buy a ticket to fly from Germany to Greece. And they had to have my name and everything. It was the only way I could do it.
Right. And now that's not the only way. In fact, you know, one could say, why would you ever use a travel agent, right? Unless there's something. So that's another profession that has been disrupted by the internet. But when it comes to even B2B, complex B2B products and solutions, the expectation that I'm going to be able to go to the web, do research, understand the problems that exist that I can relate to, and then find potential solutions to that, and then eventually move on to the selection stage of all the choices that I've discovered, which one do I want to choose and why. All of that's pretty well mapped out. And at that point, that's when buyers are typically contacting vendors and asking for a proposal or a price quote or a statement of work or whatever the contract is that they need to move forward on. So channel partners, for the most part, haven't recognized this change in buyer behavior and still hire outbound salespeople who are making 75 to 100 phone calls a day. They're still running traditional marketing campaigns. They're sending millions of spam email messages a year. And none of that stuff works because we all have great tools to control not receiving unsolicited phone calls, not receiving all that email. We are able to block those out because we've got great technical tools to do it.
So, Mike, you talk about how these companies are not keeping up, and I see it a lot. And yet, when you talk to people about how buyers buy differently now than they did 10, 15 years ago, they often will agree with me and say, oh, yep, that's how I buy. But then I say, but do you think your customers aren't buying that way? What, any idea why there seems to be so much of a legacy thinking and lack of adoption of more modern marketing approaches?
I think it's a control issue, largely. People feel better when they are pushing outbound salespeople to make phone calls, when they're sending out, you know, all these email campaigns. It feels good to move the arms and legs and kind of do these things. You feel like you actually have control over it. The reality is you don't, because people are using all kinds of different technologies, from do not call lists and all kinds of other things, to block you out. The approach that we know is more successful around content marketing, inbound marketing, whatever the methodology is that you're subscribing to, it takes more time because you're putting content out there and trying to attract the interest of prospective buyers. And I think what gives a lot of executives heartache about that is that they don't have control. They're sitting and waiting for people. What we try to talk to people about in our work here is that inbound, the HubSpot methodology, if you subscribe to it, I think they can claim ownership of it. HubSpot's inbound methodology, inbound leads to smarter outbound. So we're not saying completely stop doing outbound. We're just saying use your inbound marketing techniques, collect information about what people are expressing interest in, and then use that to do more targeted outbound campaigns. And that can be done in the world of channel partners as well.
Mm-hmm. There's a real false dichotomy I see out there where companies think, oh, you can only do inbound or outbound. And I'm like, pull my hair out. There needs to be a rich stew of a lot of things you have to do. There's no silver bullet. There's no easy button. You're not going to be successful if you don't do both. But let's talk about inbound and HubSpot and so forth. You mentioned the book Inbound Marketing by the HubSpot founders, Dharmesh Shah and Brian Halligan. And, you know, if you go onto the HubSpot website, as we do often, we're HubSpot partners. We use it. And, you know, having observed how they do their channel program with us as a partner, made it even a richer experience reading your book. But in their methodology and in that book, Inbound Marketing, they talk about the four stages of the inbound marketing methodology, which is attract, convert, close, and delight. So attract more traffic to your site, convert those visitors into a lead, at minimum get an email address, and then nurture them toward a sale, and then once they're a customer, delight them. And in your book, you talk about a slightly different approach, but, and I'll send you a picture of it, I wrote the word brilliant on there because I'm going to be using it. I'm stealing it, my friend. I'm using it, and I'm already planning a talk I'm going to be doing where I'm going to include this. Talk about the fundamental behaviors that modern buyers exhibit, which you all describe as learning, shopping, buying, and recommending. And explain why you use those words instead of attract, convert, close, and delight.
Well, you know, not to take anything away from HubSpot and what they're talking about in their approach and their methodology, but it's very much directed at the company who's executing the marketing activity.
Yes.
You know, that's what you're trying to do, is attract, convert, close, and delight. What's helpful, I think, in designing campaigns, and this is a bit for the channel marketers who aren't maybe as well versed in this as some of their direct colleagues who go out to the conferences and pick up the methodology. What we're trying to simplify in our articulation of this is what's going on in the mind of the buyer. So if you think about your own behavior and using an example of planning a vacation or something like that, you know, we're always all in learning mode, but you're not always in shopping or buying mode for any given product or solution. And a lot of marketing, and if you read Seth Godin and, you know, people like him, you know, permission marketing, having the you know, receiving permission from someone to interrupt their lives, you know, is not given out lightly. And so that's when you're in shopping mode, you're giving that permission for somebody to interrupt you, to send you messages that speak to their products and services because you're in that mode. But you're typically only in that mode for a certain period of time. So if you think about, everybody's always in learning mode, and what I want to do with my content is always have something out there that will help people learn and attract them, because those who teach earn the right to sell.
And that was my favorite sentence in the book, Mike. You said it before I had a chance to. I loved it. Those in the modern economy, those that teach earn the right to sell. Bravo.
Well, thanks. And I think that it's a statement that we certainly talk about with channel marketers as we work with them day to day, because we're trying to create more teaching moments for their channel partners. So ultimately, that's who we're all lining up to try to help succeed, is the channel partner talking to that end customer or prospect that they're trying to sell something to. Many channel organizations, as they create content, skip over the learning stage and just create content for shopping and buying. Here's my product. Here's why you should buy it. Well, what if I never even heard of you before? What if I don't trust you? And so when we skip over the learning stage content, that's really the big problem. The learning piece, of course, falls onto shopping. And so shopping would be maybe by reading something in kind of your learning content, I discovered that I have a problem that can be solved. Maybe I never knew it could be solved before, but now I know from reading some of this learning content that it can be solved. And not only that, I've identified you as a potential solution for my problems. As I shop, I'm now looking around at all the different options that are available in the market and trying to figure out which ones may or may not be able to solve my problem.
Mm-hmm. Like you said, HubSpot is very effective. And it's terrific for explaining the types of things that you should be, in many instances, trying to do. To look at it another way, if you think of a sales funnel, which is awareness, consideration, and decision, which a lot at HubSpot, I think they use that too. You know, yes. And the funnel gets smaller. So you say there's a lot more people learning in the awareness stage than there are people who are shopping, considering their alternatives, and buying, selecting a vendor or purchasing. So the learning and shopping and buying, what particularly interested me is that it is, I think, a better way to explain that sales funnel or to contrast it with awareness, consideration, and decision. Or another way that I've heard it described, which is, I think, again, helpful, is why, how, and who. So why do I have this problem? How do I solve it? What are my options? Shopping. And who can do it? You know, that's the buying part. So it works better visually with apologies to the listeners. We're going to take a break here so I can tell you more about how Blinkist can help your career. Listening to the Marketing Book Podcast says more about you than you may realize. In addition to being physically attractive, seriously, I've met many of you, and you are a very attractive audience. It also means that you're curious and serious about your business success, and you enjoy learning new things. And your interest in learning also means you're either successful or will be, because all the research indicates that big learners are big earners. Plus, with all the changes happening in marketing and sales, continuous learning is crucial, but there's only so much time and you need to manage it carefully. And unless you're, say, the host of the Marketing Book Podcast, you may not be set up to read a book every week. That's where Blinkist can really be a time saver and a career booster. Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, is a smartphone app that takes the key insights from over 2,000 best-selling nonfiction books and distills them into a format that you can read or listen to in just 15 minutes or less. Instead of having to wade through hundreds of pages of a book, spending hours reading each book like I do every week, you can go through two books in 30 minutes. And the books that are on Blinkist are really top-notch, including several books that have been featured on the Marketing Book Podcast, including The New Rules of Marketing and PR by David Meerman Scott, Perennial Seller by Ryan Holiday, Epic Content Marketing by Joe Polizzi, Everybody Writes by Ann Hanley, Hug Your Haters by Jay Baer, and many, many more. It took me hours to read those books, but you can get smart audio summaries of each one in just 15 minutes. Blinkist has been selected as one of the best apps by Forbes, New York Times, and BuzzFeed, amongst others, and it's used by over 1 million people. Right now, Blinkist has a special offer for Marketing Book Podcast listeners. Go to Blinkist.com/marketingbookpodcast right now, today, to start your free trial or get 20% off your yearly plan when you join. That's Blinkist, B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/marketingbookpodcast to start your free trial or get 20% off your yearly plan. I recommend getting the yearly plan. That's what I did, and getting 20% off because you're going to want to keep it anyway. But don't worry, because there's a 30-day money-back guarantee. No questions asked. Go to Blinkist.com/marketingbookpodcast, and that means you're going to be letting them know that you support the Marketing Book Podcast and that you want that discount. You'll get the free version or 20% off your annual plan. I also have a link to it at marketingbookpodcast.com. It's a great, inexpensive, and very smart investment in your professional development and career. And now, back to the show. Let's talk about one of the things as it relates to channel marketing. You talk about channel leaders frequently forget that the channel partnership is a relationship. Can you give examples of where companies are going wrong, forgetting that it's a relationship, or maybe some of the misunderstanding? I think at one point you cringed when you were at a talk and somebody talked about thinning their channel partner herd.
Right, and I've had many cringeworthy moments in my channel career because I've spent so much time working for brands where you meet executives who don't get it, and they come into a meeting and they are going to tell the channel partner what our priorities are, and you know the channel partner needs to kind of snap to
and they're going to like
embrace those. Oh, not only that, you know, here's our list of 15 priorities that we have for this year, and we need you to embrace all 15. And all like they're the top priority. Uh-huh. And, you know, when you work at a company the size of Microsoft, Microsoft can have 15 priorities. When you work with channel partners who are much smaller in most cases, and not only that, not just partnering with the Microsoft, but partnering with many other companies, they can't take all 15. They just organizationally don't have the capacity. So some of those moments and when we see brands go wrong is when they forget that it's like any relationship. And the way the conversation should go, I feel, is I come to you and say, listen, Douglas, we've got 5 priorities this year. I'm sure you have your list. Can we take them and compare them and see which ones align and see where there's an opportunity to work together to drive results for both of our companies? Mm-hmm. That's a partnership. But unfortunately, most of the time, it's the former where here's my laundry list. You need to embrace it. Tell me how you're going to support it.
These are our demands.
Yes.
Beatings will continue until morale improves. It also brings to mind what you mentioned earlier. They want control. And maybe they're used to barking out orders at employees. But the channel partners, you know, they can leave. And they might even be selling your competitors' products, too. So the backbone of the book, in my view, was this terrific methodology for channel marketing, which is to, with, through, and for partner marketing. Take some time and walk us through those 4 things.
Right. So in the ideal partnership, you have a multidimensional relationship where you're working to, through, with, and for, as you've said. So the two is really how you connect with that partner organization. And this can all be done at scale, but the idea is that we don't take anything for granted about working together, that we take the time to explain why we believe something is a valuable opportunity and really put it in the terms of the partner, in usual sense, how they're going to make money with whatever it is we're talking about. So two-partner communication is usually the form that it takes. And what we want to do with partners is articulate what we're offering, how it relates to them and their goals, and what action we're asking them to take.
And treating them like a customer at this point.
I believe so. Yeah, that's the opportunity that we see missed all the time, is that people say, well, I've already signed you up as a partner. Why should I have to explain these things? We should just be able to jump right to it. And it assumes a level of attention that we know is just not typical at this point. You know, people are going a million different directions, and most channel partners carry many different brands. And if they paid attention to all of them the way that the brands would want or expect them to, they wouldn't have any time for their own customers.
The self-centeredness is just so pervasive. It's well, now you talk about content for the two partner stage, and you explain that it's broken down into like research and skill building. Can you explain those?
Right. So the content that we look for in two partner marketing is really around explaining the messages for maybe specific programs or campaigns that you want to run, but also having the long-term perspective that if you are investing in your channel partners and helping to make them better marketers, better salespeople, better business people, that through that you will build loyalty and trust, that when you hit a bump in the road in your relationship, those are the types of things that people will remember, those investments and the relationship that you developed, and it kind of helps smooth those things out. So building content around that to help support all the different motions that the partners go through, as well as the specific content about your company and your products and solutions, is really appropriate.
So research would be like analyst reports?
Yeah. And so sometimes, you know, we're very quick, obviously, as brands to come out and say how great we are, but having content that supports that from an industry perspective. I can remember some examples of things that we did at Microsoft when I was there, where we were entering a new category, new product. We're asking channel partners to go out and invest time and resources. There's a product I spent a bunch of time on called BizTalk Server. It was about, you know, automating system connections and all this wonderful stuff. Well, it was a new category. And so if I'm a partner and you're asking me to invest time and resources in it, why should I do that? Well, here's an industry report that says the space we serve with this new product is going to be a $1 billion market within 5 years. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I'm getting in early on something. So that kind of industry research and analyst reports really helps to kind of set the table oftentimes. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, partners can then use that when they go to sell to end customers as a way to help customers understand why something is important.
Mm-hmm. So talk to us about the with, through, and for.
Right. So the two partner, once we convince a partner that whatever we're saying or want them to take action on is important and they've signed up for that, how we go to market together and deliver that message is where the with, through, and for come into it. So with partner marketing would be, we are going to go out to market together side by side as peers. And maybe this takes the form of an event. So if we want to go talk to customers about how HP products and our services are going to be powerful together, we can hold a joint event together. In the world of through partner marketing, this would be a different form where I'm going to give you the ingredients, the content usually, and you're going to go deliver it out to market. So it's the messages flowing through the partner out to end customers.
Mm-hmm.
The final piece would be the for partner marketing, where you may not be able to get that partner to actually go out and take the action themselves to deliver the marketing activity or campaign into the market. So you do it on their behalf. It's not the most desirable piece of this whole framework, but it is necessary oftentimes just to get the action to happen.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have a whole chapter about measuring success in your channel marketing, and you talk about how one of the most important metrics is actually how many of your partners or what percentage are active and engaged. And the engagement is really very important. Can you talk about some of the steps involved in getting better engagement from your channel partners?
Right. So this measurement chapter, we talk about reach, frequency, and yield as kind of the three pillars of activity. So the reach piece is how many partners are participating in your programs. Frequency is, and how often do they come back and do additional activities? And then the yield is, what's the output? What are the results that we show? Mm-hmm. So when we are working with companies around their channel marketing programs, many of them struggle with reach. Just the first piece is getting partners to participate. So we provide some examples in the book and you know, really based on our life experience here of trying to unlock the psychological barriers to participation. A lot of it has to do with incentives, that you're competing for people's attention, trying to take them away from other things that they could be spending time on. So sometimes you need to incentivize that, and it could be done with something as simple as a Starbucks card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you talk about how it's not a good idea to incent the company, but rather the rep.
We were just meeting with a customer last week, and they were telling us about an incentive program they've been running and how successful it's been because they're incentivizing the people who are doing the work. When you think about salespeople, they get commissions, they get bonuses, those kinds of things. Executives often get some sort of bonuses as well. But the channel marketers, the people who are actually sitting within the partner organizations don't usually get a lot of love and attention. So incentivizing them, the people who are actually clicking the mouse or doing the work or sending the emails, often gets you a lot of the action, which is what you're really looking for, but it also helps build that loyalty and trust, makes them feel appreciated for the work that they're contributing.
Mm-hmm. So some of the things you talked about that aren't ever, well, they don't seem to be done as much as just planning.
That's right. Planning. We see, random acts of marketing everywhere.
Oh, I love that expression. Random acts of marketing. Yeah.
And it's well-intentioned. People are trying to do their best, but it's really following this cycle where channel partners, many of them, they get very busy with other things, and then they remember, oh, we should do some marketing activity or campaign or run something. And they do it. And then it goes well or it doesn't or whatever. But then they get distracted with other things and come back and do some random acts of marketing again. So there's a great friend of mine, a former Microsoft guy who runs his own consulting firm now called Never Stop Marketing, Jeremy Epstein, brilliant guy. And his mantra with this Never Stop Marketing company that he's launched is never stop marketing, always have it going. So the way that happens in channel marketing is creating a marketing plan, putting some activity in for each and every quarter, and then having meetings where we come back and revisit the plan and really talk about how we hold each other accountable, both from the brand and the channel marketer side of the equation, to carrying out that plan.
Mm-hmm. So it was interesting. You said, after all this, when it comes to marketing your products, there are three questions every partner has. One, what's in it for me? Two, who's going to pay for it? And three, who's going to do the work? And I want you to explain what you mean when you say that too many brands consider only that last step in building their partner marketing efforts, which is who's going to do the work.
Right. It's kind of rushing to the altar on the first date in many cases. And that's where we know it's just not successful. From a marketing standpoint, there have been many studies done about how many touches with marketing campaign materials or messages buyers need to be convinced to even consider a solution, never mind select it. And so what we're looking at again is don't take for granted the piece that channel partners need some convincing, that they need help. And quite frankly, they learn in many cases as you speak to them how to go deliver that sales pitch or that marketing message to the end customer and prospect. There's a certain talk track that you use with them that they can then take and make it their own and reuse. And so by skipping over those stages and those messages and just assuming that partners have it and understand how to message it, that's where we think, to kind of go back to your sales funnel piece earlier, it's a numbers game. And so we need to have as many opportunities in that funnel as we can. The way we do that is by not skipping the early stages of the conversation, both with partners and with customers.
Measure twice and cut once. So the last thing I wanted to ask about was chapter 11 called Troubleshooting Your Channel. And I was wondering if you could talk a bit about some of the biggest problems you see, and how companies can go about troubleshooting them.
Yeah, so this chapter was one where we feel, I think overall, we try to be very positive and optimistic and share that kind of advice, but we know that people are going to hit some bumps in the road, so we tried to be proactive in addressing some of this because we see it all the time.
You were managing expectations.
Well, there are some organizations who are 100% channel. They only go to market through channel partners, and boy, life is nice for them. It's still hard work, but they don't have a problem that many companies frequently run into, which is having a direct versus indirect war within the organization. So this might manifest itself in the fact that channel partners are going out, running your programs, generating leads, and your direct sales team steals them.
Right.
So nothing will undo all your good work and all the loyalty and trust and investment in those partner relationships you've built faster than someone on the direct team stealing a deal from a partner who's worked so hard and invested so much time only to be undercut in the final mile.
Mm-hmm.
So what we talk about is really establishing those rules of engagement early on inside your company before you start working with channel partners so that you have some rules in place that your direct team knows how to operate and what the consequences are for breaking those rules. So that's one way that we see you have an opportunity to be proactive and kind of address something hopefully before it becomes an issue.
Mm-hmm. One of the other problems you mentioned was they're still trying to control their partners.
Right. And trying to control, and we're all adults, right? You know, we're running a business, you're running a business, how we go and talk to a channel partner. I was at, talk about another cringeworthy moment. I was at a conference one time and heard an executive tell a ballroom full of channel partners. So, you know, big room of people, long established channel partners, that what she was recommending they do was as simple as brushing their teeth and they just needed to do it.
Oh, stay classy.
Right. So that was an unbelievable moment. So, you know, you learn from, you know, good and the bad, but I looked at that and said, whatever position I'm in for a company, I'm never going to speak to channel partners that way. We're going to treat each other like adults. We're going to have respect for each other. We're going to try to understand and be empathetic, which we think is really a core skill of channel marketers, showing empathy for what they're trying to do and trying to treat them as adults and find the things that are in common. And kind of one of the problems we see in channel marketing as well is many times people have executives who don't have channel experience sitting above them in the org chart, trying to exert this level of control. And so teaching them how to think like a partner, how to be empathetic, is often a lot of work.
Yeah, I think empathy is the most important word in sales and marketing. You know, the more books I read, it always keeps coming back to that. And, you know, it's obviously one of the most difficult things for people. And for companies. So, Mike, if readers took only one thing away from the book, what would you hope it would be?
Well, for people who find themselves in a channel marketing role, I think I'd want them to understand that there is a method to the madness. There is a framework that can be embraced to try to bring some order and structure to their lives to get them into being more strategic than tactical, and that it's within reach. And that's what we've tried to explain in Marketing Multiplied.
Well, you know, I think about it, and it's almost like at the beginning of the book, you talk about how people kind of find themselves there, and it's like, oh, you're in charge of the channel. And that's about as much direction as they're going to get.
That's right. And I think that people are often trying to figure things out. And what we want to do in the book is to give them a script to follow. And it's not going to account for every situation that they're going to find themselves in. But we think if you at least set up a foundation for your work, and then quite frankly, use this as a way to educate others in the organization, then you can bring some consistency to what you're doing instead of having what often channel marketers find themselves as kind of a haphazard approach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what books have inspired your work and career?
Oof. Well, there's a great book by a guy named Poe Bronson called What Should I Do With My Life?
Oh, wow.
I don't know if you've ever seen it.
No, I haven't.
One.
I'll have to look that up.
So Poe is an author who had written a book in kind of the dot-com, you know, era, late 90s, and had one successful book and then was trying to figure out if he could make a career out of being an author. And he started asking other people for advice and recommendations, turned it into a book project, interviewed 50 people, told their stories in the book called What Should I Do With My Life? And through that, found his own answer. And of course, established himself as a successful author.
Well, that sounds terrific.
Yeah, it's a great one. It's What Should I Do? It's not necessarily what you will do, but it gives you a way to think about your career and your life and what's important to you.
Yeah, and it's a question I ask myself every morning, frankly. So are there any recent or upcoming books that you recommend or are looking forward to reading?
Oh, boy. I think that...
Now that you've written your book, maybe you have some time to read one.
Yeah, I'm a fan of more on the fiction side, I guess, is probably where I spend the majority of my time reading. But
That's good. That's very good.
a big fan of Marcus Buckingham. I love the Strength Finder and those kind of things from a business perspective. I believe very much in playing to your strengths versus spending a ton of time, you know, being self-critical and looking at your deficiencies. I think it's much better to get in touch with what you're strong at and really focus on that. So I love his stuff.
What kind of fiction do you like?
Boy, I am a big fan of Michael Connelly. He writes this Harry Bosch series, which they've turned into an Amazon Prime show. It's really great.
I read one of those. Did he write The Lincoln Lawyer?
Yeah, Lincoln Lawyer is also his. Yep. Uh-huh. Harlan Coben, Nelson DeMille, John Grisham.
Oh, I love Nelson DeMille. Oh, yeah. Oh, great.
And then Lee Child is a great one. You mentioned at the beginning my military police service that I did. So Lee Child writes about this character called Jack Reacher. They've actually optioned this into a movie that Tom Cruise is in, where he's a former military policeman now kind of wandering around, you know, finding trouble.
Working so at a channel partner company.
Yeah, yeah. Focusing on channel marketing. Very, very exciting stuff. Yeah.
Well, you know. So we'll include links to a lot of those books, as many as we can find, or at least the author pages, in your episode's show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. And show notes means it's a blog post just about this episode. But if listeners go to marketingbookpodcast.com, they'll find it. So, Mike, how best can listeners learn more about you and your book?
Sure. So the book website is marketingmultiplied-book.com, and you can find information and contact me or contact Peter, my co-author there. And then, of course, LinkedIn and Twitter, I'm pretty easy to find. So would love to hear from people.
So on the show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com, we're going to include the links to your Twitter handle as well as Peter's. And so everybody can click through and message you there. The website, marketingmultiplied-book.com. And again, we'll have a link to that at the show notes. And there's also another page I insist on linking to from that, which is the resources page. It's terrific. You've listed, I think, almost every book or ebook that you had in there. We're also going to include a link to your LinkedIn profile and Peter's. And there's one other thing you didn't mention, but you have set up a LinkedIn group on Marketing Multiplied, Channel Marketing Community. So I've joined it, and I think that folks that are in channel marketing would really should check that out and connect with other folks and listen to what people are talking about.
Yeah, that's great. We set up the LinkedIn group because beyond the book, you know, there's certainly the people that we know and have in our networks today from our day-to-day work, but would love to help connect more people to that group and to others and hear what questions they have and make this more of a community than just kind of a one-time experience reading a book.
Yeah, maybe a support group. Just kidding.
We could all use one.
Yes, yes. The name of the book is Marketing Multiplied, A Real-World Guide to Channel Marketing for Beginners, Practitioners, and Executives. The authors are Mike Moore and Peter Thomas. Mike, thank you very much for being on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thanks, Douglas. It's been a pleasure.
And that closes the book on episode 175 of the Marketing Book Podcast. For more, check out this episode's show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. And if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or other helpful resource, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn where we can chat and I'll try to point you in the right direction. My name again is Douglas Burdett. Special thanks to our sponsor, Blinkist. To support the Marketing Book Podcast and start your free Blinkist trial or get 20% off your yearly plan, visit Blinkist.com/MarketingBookPodcast. I also have a link to that special offer at MarketingBookPodcast.com. And please join us next time as we welcome Dan Gingis to the Marketing Book Podcast to talk about his book, Winning at Social Customer Care, how top brands create engaging experiences on social media. Thanks again for listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.